This is Audible.
Critical Failure 6. The Good, the Bad, and the Neutral. Written by Robert Bevan. Narrated by Jonathan Sleep. Chapter 1.
What the fuck?
Said Cooper. Catherine, Tim, the Pegasus, the big-ass beanstalk. They were all gone. They just blinked out of existence, leaving behind an untouched expanse of sun-bleached sand.
Where'd all those vines and shit go?
Did it just get darker?
Asked Chaz.
Where did those mountains come from?
Asked Julian. Captain Righteous looked at Cooper like he had dicks growing out of his nose.
Do none of you know of the Crescent Shadow?
Cooper, Julian, Dave, and Chaz gave noncommittal shrugs.
Bits and pieces, said Stacy. We've heard about it in passing.
You're aware, at least, that it's the island we're currently suspended from.
I did know that.
It's a retirement community for wealthy and powerful wizards. It periodically blinks to random points above the fertile desert.
Captain Righteous squinted at the distant purple mountains.
If I had to guess, I'd say those are the Haunted Highlands, which would put the city of Totino just to the southwest.
Cooper's mind wandered away from the captain's geography lesson, distracted by thoughts of delicious pizza rolls. He grabbed the bars on either side of the open part of his cage, then squatted so that his ass was hanging outside.
What are you doing?
Asked Julian.
You're making me very nervous.
I've got a big one brewing. I want to see if it's visible from way up here when it splatters on the sand.
Didn't you shit like 8 times on the way to Mincewater?
Asked Stacy.
Excuse me. I didn't realize we had daily shit limits.
I was just wondering where it all comes from. Have you even eaten anything since then?
I don't know,
said Cooper, now getting annoyed that everyone's attention was focused on him trying to take a dump.
Unlike you, I haven't been keeping fucking records of every time someone eats or takes a...
He grunted as his bowels constricted and his cargo bay door opened, releasing his parapoopers over hostile foreign lands. It came out like farty machine gun fire. Cooper closed his eyes, imagining himself as a ball turret on the underside of a B-17, blasting Nazi shitheads out of the air. He waved his ass from side to side, splattering his payload all over windshields of imaginary enemy aircraft.
Get a loofed whiff of that, Nazi bitches!
Cooper! Cried Julian. The decanter!
Cooper opened his eyes just in time to catch the decanter of endless water rolling between his legs.
Shit!
He let go of the bar on his left to catch the decanter, but so much of his weight was outside of the cage that he lost his balance and fell out completely. His right hand slid down the bar and hit the cage floor hard, but he hung on and even managed to catch the decanter between his knees. He thought he'd finished shitting for the time being, but this little brush with death made him carpet bomb the desert one more time.
Cooper, said Stacy, are you okay?
My hand hurts, and I may have just shat out my large intestine, but I'm hanging in there.
Cooper grabbed the decanter with his left hand, then inserted the neck into his mouth like a big old silver dick. Holding it tight with his thick, meaty half-orc lips, he pulled himself up one-handed until he could grab the cage floor with his other hand. After a bit of struggle, he pulled himself back into the cage. Chaz pressed his face between two of his bars and glared at Cooper.
You need to be more careful.
Cooper gave him the finger.
Thanks, Mom. I can take care of myself.
I don't give a shit about you. That decanter is the only thing keeping us alive if we can't figure out a way to get someone to come and rescue us.
Hey, Cooper, said Dave. Why don't you hose us down once more just to reset the clock in case you decide to do anything else really stupid?
Cooper pressed his back against the bars on the left side of his cage and his feet on the bars at either corner of the right side. Seeing him do so, everyone else likewise braced themselves. He unstoppered the decanter, aimed the mouth at Dave, and spoke the incantation.
Geyser!
A torrent of water gushed out of the decanter, hosing Dave right in his fat bearded face and launching Cooper's cage backwards, crashing it into Stacy's. When everyone had had their fill of water, Cooper deactivated the geyser setting, then tipped the decanter above his own open mouth, letting water flow normally.
Great, said Stacy. Like Dave said, the clock is reset. Now what? We can starve to death over 3 weeks rather than thirst to death over 3 days. Personally, I think we should do something a little more proactive than wait around hoping to be rescued.
Do you have any ideas? Asked Captain Righteous.
His pudgy little sidekick looked up hopefully at Stacy. Stacy frowned.
No.
Cooper had been thinking about an idea, but he was timid about saying it aloud. It sounded pretty stupid, even to him, and he knew that he was already pretty stupid, and even if it worked at all, he wasn't sure if it would work for everyone. Then again, maybe someone else could take the idea and tweak it a little. It would be a shame for everyone to starve to death because he hadn't spoken up. He cleared his throat.
I've got an idea.
Jazz rolled his eyes as he wrung the water from the bottom of his shiny pink tunic.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
Step one, said Cooper. Jazz eats a dick.
Julian sighed.
Oh, do you actually have an idea, or was that just a setup to tell Jazz to eat a dick?
I've got kind of an idea. It's a little far-fetched, maybe, but as long as nobody else is coming up with anything.
What is it?
Cooper held up the decanter of endless water.
I could hose down the ground until there's enough vegetation to break our fall.
Captain Righteous shook his head.
No amount of cabbages and tomatoes would make an appreciable difference from this high up.
I think it's a fine idea,
said Chaz.
I'd recommend you give it a shot if we didn't need the water.
How about I give your mom a shot?
Chaz clapped his hands.
Brilliant comeback. Your mom shtick is getting old. That wasn't even an insult.
Guys, said Julian. None of this is helping. You can bicker with each other once we're not dangling from a floating island.
Cooper looked down through the bars at the bottom of his cage.
I'm sorry. Chaz is right.
It's okay. We really need to...
I can do better.
Cooper unstoppered the decanter of endless water, lifted the front of his loincloth, and inserted his dick into the mouth.
Oh, said Stacy.
Mercy of the gods, said Captain Righteous. We need to drink from that, said Dave.
Cooper ignored them all, thrusting himself repeatedly into the decanter.
How do you like that, Chaz's mom? Oh, even better than any of the 4 dozen top contenders for Chaz's biological father? Thank you very much. It's kind of you to say so.
His balls made a nice splashing sound with every thrust against the water pouring out.
Cooper, said Julian, please stop that.
She's almost finished. She said she's had every kind of dick in the world, from Korean to kangaroo, but she's never had a half-orc dick in her before.
Chaz gave Cooper the finger.
You're such a fucking asshole.
Oh, almost there.
Cooper needed to cut this short because the constant trickle of water on his junk was actually starting to arouse him.
Guess what, Chaz? Mom's a squirter.
He removed the decanter of endless water from his dick and aimed it at Chaz.
Geyser!
The force of the water sent Cooper's cage swinging, so it required some effort to keep the stream focused on Chaz, who writhed and twisted in a glorious shower of dick water.
Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck!
Snap. Chaz's cage fell. The chain it had hung from, now unburdened, swung wide.
Chaz!
Cried Dave.
Oh, shit!
Said Cooper. He deactivated the decanter, secured it tight against his chest like a football, and let himself fall out of his cage.
Cooper!
Cried Julian and Stacy. Cooper tumbled through the air at about the same speed as Chaz's cage. He needed to catch up. After lining himself up so that his head was pointed toward the cage, he pointed the decanter toward his feet.
Geyser!
Much to Cooper's surprise, it worked exactly like he'd hoped it would. It was like a jetpack, except with water instead of fire. That was fortunate, because a fire-based jetpack would be burning his dick off right now.
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? Fuck no! It's Cooper Man!
Chaz had apparently gotten over the dick water thing because he pushed himself out of his cage and opened his arms to intercept the rocket-propelled Cooper coming at him. When they collided, Chaz nearly knocked the decanter loose from Cooper's grip, but Cooper held on as Chaz clung to him like an insecure girlfriend.
Guys are off,
said Cooper. The water stopped flowing, and they were free-falling right alongside Chaz's cage.
What are you doing?
Cried Chaz.
We have to point it down.
Cooper shifted the decanter so that the mouth was pointed straight at the rapidly approaching desert.
Try to stay balanced.
Chaz nodded.
Geyser!
They weaved and wobbled a bit, but managed to keep from flipping over. Cooper was hoping that this would work like one of those vertical landing jets, slowing their descent to a soft landing, but it felt like they were still falling pretty fucking fast. Then again, Chaz's cage was falling away from them, so they must have slowed down some. Cooper hoped it would be enough to survive. Hugging Chaz as tightly as Chaz was hugging him, Cooper wasn't able to look directly below them. He didn't know what kind of vegetation they were about to splatter into. He hoped it wasn't something hard like a giant coconut or pineapple. That would be a bitch. Crash! He'd lost sight of the cage. When he finally heard it hit the sand, it sounded just as loud as if it had landed on solid concrete. A trickle of liquid warmth came from Chaz's crotch. He knew it too. They were both so fucking splat. Pain. So much pain. Everything hurt. But pain meant that he was alive, right? He opened his eyes. Holy shit. It was so much worse than he was prepared for. He was in a sea of gore, dripping blood and flesh everywhere. His brain must have been pumping out dopamine or whatever to ease him through his last few seconds of life. He'd seen this shit on the Discovery Channel. Chaz groaned. Fuck, he was alive too. The decanter had been a mistake. This was going to be so much worse than a quick splatter on the desert floor.
My fucking back,
said Chaz, struggling to sit up. Cooper shoved him back down with his right arm, which was dripping with tendrils of red slimy flesh.
Don't try to get up. Just let yourself go.
The decanter was lodged in an enormous chunk of flesh, possibly Cooper's rib cage or something, spraying a gushing stream of water horizontally over their heads.
What is all this?
It's us,
said Cooper. It was hard to believe there was so much of them. It was like they were inside an exploded whale.
I don't think this is us,
said Chaz. He raised his hand into the water spray. When he pulled it back out, it was whole.
What the fuck?
Said Cooper.
The water healed you?
No, it didn't heal me. It washed me.
Chaz sat up, grabbed a small chunk of gore, then tasted it. Cooper cringed.
Dude, do you even know if that's part of me or you?
It's neither. We're inside a giant tomato.
Chapter 2.
You stupid hillbilly fuck!
Catherine grabbed a squash from a nearby vine and hurled it at Randy.
You fed my brother to your...
She looked at the horse-sized, eight-legged, eyeless reptilian monstrosity standing next to him, searching for the right word, but coming up empty.
Whatever the fuck this thing is...
His name is Basil.
I don't give a shit what his name is. Cut him open and get my brother out of there.
Your brother's gone, honey tits,
said the dwarf woman, dressed in a beanpod diaper.
I don't care how tough he was. Don't nobody survive that kind of fall, then getting eaten by a basilisk.
Butterbean growled at her.
I understand you're upset, said Randy. But Denise is right. Killing Basil ain't gonna bring Tim back.
Catherine wished she still had her vampire powers. She could have so easily beaten the shit out of these dumbass rednecks and torn this deformed dinosaur thing apart from its asshole. Acknowledging that those options were currently off the table, she took a deep breath and tried explaining.
I understand that Tim didn't survive having his throat slit, falling from an island floating 500 feet in the air, and getting eaten by...
Basil.
Thank you, Catherine said curtly. Basil. But we are in a fantasy game, and there are ways to bring dead people back to life. I would like to go into the city and find someone who can do that, but I need Tim's body in order to do that.
Denise grimaced.
Even if it's all chewed up and digested and shit?
Catherine felt tears welling up. A few minutes ago, she'd had herself convinced that Tim's death was no big deal, that getting him back was just going to be a minor inconvenience. Now the realization that she truly might never see her brother again was rapidly dawning on her.
I've got to try.
Randy opened his arms to her.
Come on.
Catherine supposed there was no point in trying to hide her emotions. She allowed him to embrace her and sobbed against his chest.
I can't believe he's gone.
I know, darling. Randy hugged her tightly. He's at peace now.
That much was true. Tim had been following a figurative downward trajectory long before he entered the literal one which smashed him into the fertile desert. Bad luck with women, low self-esteem, terrible business person, anxiety, depression, drinking. All that had only gotten worse since they'd gotten themselves stuck in this game. Maybe he was better off now than if he continued on as he was going.
Old Basil here might have found some middle ground for you, said Denise, walking out from behind the massive lizard and carrying a platter-sized cabbage leaf
from the bottom with both hands.
"What you got there?"
asked Randy. Denise dropped the cabbage leaf. It thunked down hard on the sand. On top of it was a long gray turd in a rough figure-eight pattern. It was as thick around as Denise's dwarven forearm and smelled like one of Cooper's shits had taken a shit.
"I reckon it's Tim."
Catherine pushed Randy away and glared at Denise.
"Is that supposed to be funny?"
She stomped toward her, half wishing she had a weapon, but also relishing the thought of pounding this squat, banjo-plucking bitch with her bare fists.
"Give me one reason I shouldn't kick your fat, hairy ass."
Denise backed away from her.
"I'll give you two. First, I'm pregnant."
Catherine stopped and glanced at Randy for confirmation. Randy nodded.
"Did you?"
Randy shook his head. Catherine turned back to Denise.
"How'd you get knocked up so quickly?"
"A scorpion lady injected her fertilized eggs up in my cooter."
"Oh,"
was all Catherine could think to say in response.
"And the other thing is that I wasn't joking. I reckon there's got to be some of your brother in there. I saw folks get fucked up pretty bad when them guys in the flying boat stormed the city with all the dragons. They went back to perfectly normal when Randy's blasphemy monster hosed them all down with blood."
Catherine couldn't see how this related to her brother being a lizard turd, but she was willing to listen to a little more.
"Go on."
"They had arms burnt down to bones, missing fingers, hair all burnt away. Then when they came back to life, they looked good as new, like they ain't even been touched. If there's magic in this world that can do that, who knows how much more it could do, given just a little to work with."
Denise looked down at the turd.
"I reckon there's got to be at least some of your brother in there. It couldn't hurt to ask."
Catherine put her bag of holding on the ground next to the turd leaf, lifted the top of the rim, then slid the leaf in. When her brother's remains were safely in the bag, she stood up.
"Randy, you've got a little bit of celebrity pull with the temple folks now, right? I need you to come with me."
Randy shrugged.
"I don't know how much pull I got, but I'd be happy to join you."
Denise twirled some hairs on the side of her short beard.
"I wonder if they might be able to sort out my situation as well." "Are you talking about an abortion?"
asked Randy.
"Of course not. Don't go bringing politics into this shit. Ain't nobody said nothing about no abortions. I'm just talking about getting rid of these fucking monster babies growing inside me."
The town Catherine had flown out from was visible as a shimmering green haze on the eastern horizon, but it would be a long walk. Darius, the Pegasus she'd befriended and who'd rescued her and Butterbean from the Crescent Shadow, could fly them there in no time if Catherine stuffed them all in her bag of holding. She opened the bag and was about to open her mouth when she spotted Randy frowning pitifully at the bag as he stroked the big lizard monster's cheek. He'd gone and fallen for the thing. She wanted to reason with him, maybe promise to buy him a less disgusting-looking pet like a puppy or a kitten that would have eyes and be able to fit easily through the mouth of a bag of holding. But when she thought of her own relationship with Butterbean and the amount of reasoning it would take for someone to convince her to ditch him in the desert, she surmised that convincing Randy would be more trouble than just making the journey on foot.
"Fuck,"
said Catherine, then scanned the ground for a suitable parting gift. Spotting a nice ripe cantaloupe, she plucked it from the vine and held it before Darius.
"Thank you for your help. You can go home. I have to travel with these people now."
Darius bit off a quarter of the cantaloupe, swallowed it back, then took another bite. He finished the whole thing in under a minute, then pressed his cheek against Catherine's.
"Thank you again. Maybe we'll see each other again someday."
Catherine wrapped her arms around his neck and stroked his mane. Darius whinnied quietly. When Catherine let go, he reared up on his hind legs, spread his massive black wings, and started flying back toward Produce City, or whatever the hell that place was called. Chapter 3.
"That idiot,"
said Dave, clenching his fists so hard that the leopard fur on his left forearm bristled.
"He killed Chaz! He killed himself, and he's essentially killed all of us by taking the water with him!"
Julian peered through the bars at the bottom of his cage, but couldn't make out much.
"We don't know they're dead. Cooper wouldn't have jumped if he didn't think he could save Chaz."
"He is as brave as he is stupid," said Captain Righteous. "But I must agree with the dwarf. The chances of either of them surviving that fall... I'm sorry for your losses."
Stacy lay on the floor of her cage, with her head poking out of the open side.
"I see something down there, like a big red splat."
Julian cringed.
Cooper!
Oh, said Stacy. I should have been clearer. It doesn't look like the obvious big red splat one might expect to see. It's a brighter red.
Julian suddenly had an idea. He pulled his serape open.
Ravenous, wake up!
Ravenous opened his beak wide and yawned.
Good morning, sir.
Cooper and Chaz just fell. I need you to fly to the ground and see if they're all right.
Ravenous looked down outside the cage, then back up at Julian.
I'm not sure I need to fly all the way down there to assess their situation, sir.
Will you please just humor me?
Very good, sir.
Ravenous crawled out from Julian's serape and hopped down to the edge of the cage floor.
And Ravenous, said Julian.
Yes?
If they're, you know, dead, we're going to try to get them resurrected, so don't eat their eyes.
Very good, sir.
Ravenous let himself fall out of the cage, spread his wings, and glided in a downward spiral to the desert below. Captain Righteous glared at Julian through his cage bars.
What? Said Julian.
You've had that bird tucked under your clothes this whole time?
Not in a weird way or anything. He likes it in there.
It can understand everything you say and follow commands?
Ravenous is my familiar.
Then why did you not command it to go seek help, or a lever to raise these cages, or anything at all?
Julian frowned. That was an excellent question with no readily apparent non-stupid answer.
Honestly, with all we've been through, it slipped my mind.
I can't believe it, said Dave. You've killed us all.
We don't know that anyone's dead.
Julian was feeling quite a bit of guilt, but he wasn't going to let Dave throw him under the bus.
Besides, you know I had Ravenous with me. I didn't hear you bringing up any ideas.
I've been up here for days.
Dave shook the bars of his cage.
I'm starving and exhausted. I can barely think straight. I didn't have the easy key to our survival nuzzled against my fucking chest this whole time.
Take it easy, Dave, said Stacy. These cages are old. If you snap your chain, I'm not jumping down after you.
Dave looked at the broken length of chain that used to support Chaz's cage, then stopped shaking the bars and started weeping.
We're going to be okay, said Julian. Ravenous must be close enough to see them by now. I'm not sensing any feelings of sadness or sudden hunger from them, so Cooper's idea might have worked. When Ravenous reports back, I'll send them to go look for...
The sun jumped about 2 feet to the right. The sky was brighter, the air was warmer, and tall rock formations suddenly appeared on the southern horizon. Julian's empathic link with Ravenous was severed.
Shit!
Whoa,
said Stacy.
Are those dragons?
Julian hadn't noticed them before she mentioned it, preoccupied with worry for Ravenous. But now that he was paying attention, he could see massive flying lizards circling around the rocks. Captain Righteous laughed.
Ha ha! They only wish. Even from a distance, you can see they lack front legs.
So they're...
Julian paused in the hope that the captain would fill in the blank. When that failed to happen, he was forced to think of something to finish his sentence.
Amputees?
Captain Righteous looked at him like he was wondering if that was a serious question.
They're wyverns.
What's a wyvern? Asked Stacy.
A distant cousin to dragons, but dumber than an ogre, and even some of you. They've been hunted to extinction in most parts of the world by trophy hunters who try to pass off their heads as those of true dragons, by certain types of dragons who find their existence distasteful, and by...
A tiny orange ball of magical energy streaked across the sky from higher up on the crescent shadow toward the rocks on the horizon. It struck one of the wyverns and expanded like a second sun before collapsing in on itself again. The wyvern spiraled out of control and crashed into the rocks. Captain Righteous sighed.
And by the occasional random asshole.
They seem to be thriving well enough here, said Julian. I mean, aside from that one.
Those rocks, you see, are called Wyvern's Roost. Beyond that is the Southern Sea. Look east, and you'll see the wastelands of Meb-Gashur. West is the gnomish kingdom of Cobblebach.
Captain Righteous squinted, put his arm through the bars, and pointed at something just west of Wyvern Roost.
If you look carefully, you can make out the village of Plunkett. The gnomes there have a special relationship with the wyverns of the roost. They even have a division of wyvern riders.
It's nice that they care enough to protect endangered wildlife, said Stacy.
Nice has nothing to do with it. Wyvern's Roost is the only thing that keeps the orcs of Mebgashur from marching into Cobblebach. The Southern Sea provides plenty of food, and the gnomes in Plonkett actually developed special incubation chambers for the wyvern's eggs to help them reproduce more quickly.
Fascinating, said Dave. When I'm drinking my own piss in an effort to stave off death for a few more miserable hours, I'll be so glad to have spent what little time I had left learning the history of Nobbycock.
Do you suppose there's any chance of us attracting the attention of one of those wyvern riders? Asked Stacy.
Captain Righteous shook his head. Doubtful. Even if any of those wyverns had riders, which they don't appear to, we're too far away for them to spot.
That's what I thought. Stacy sighed and pulled a coil of black rope out of her pack.
What are you doing? Asked Julian.
Getting us out of here.
How?
By being awesome.
She tied one end of the rope to the bottom of a bar next to the open side of the cage. After giving it a couple of good yanks to make sure it was secure, she tossed the rest of the coil out to dangle in the open air. Dave frowned.
If you had 100 more ropes, I could see where you were going with this, but...
Please shut up, Dave. I'm nervous enough about this as it is.
Stacy climbed out of the cage and lowered herself slowly down the rope.
I've got to agree with Dave on this one, said Julian. Taking 50 feet off your fall isn't going to make a whole lot of difference.
Stacy, having reached the bottom of the rope, looked up and smiled at him.
Then I'd better not fall.
She kicked both legs forward, then back, then forward, then back, getting into a swinging motion. Julian finally figured out what she was going for, and it nearly made him throw up. She was trying to swing far enough to jump over to the observation platform where Mordred had slit Tim's throat. Success would involve a nearly impossible dexterity check.
What you're trying to do is preposterous, said Captain Righteous. Get back in your cage!
Stacy swung harder, getting a little more height with each swing.
It looks preposterous, but like I said, I'm awesome!
Julian glanced nervously up at the chain holding Stacy's cage, then even more nervously down at Stacy.
Your high ability scores make you better than average at things. They don't make you a superhero.
If you got any better ideas, I'm listening.
She had the cage swinging at this point.
I think not killing yourself is a better idea.
I agree,
said an old man's voice from up on the observation platform. The speaker was a little old gnome in what looked like Ebenezer Scrooge pajamas, complete with a nightcap. He frowned at the dangling length of chain that used to be holding Chaz's cage.
What's going on up there?
Asked Stacy.
Who is that?
Just climb back up the rope, would you?
Said Julian. Then he made eye contact with the old gnome.
Are you here to rescue us?
The gnome shrugged.
I suppose. I heard shouting, and I came down to investigate.
He looked at Catherine's empty cage, then at Cooper's.
I seem to remember hearing more voices.
Some of our friends managed to escape already, said Julian. At least we hope.
Please, sir, said Dave. I've been in here a long time. I haven't eaten or slept. Can we talk about this after you've pulled the cages back up?
The gnome scratched his beard and nodded slowly, like he had other things on his mind.
Please,
Dave repeated.
Yes, of course,
said the gnome, as if suddenly coming out of a trance.
I saw some levers in the room back there.
He nodded back to the opening behind him.
I suppose one of those might do the trick.
Awesome. Go give it a try, why don't you?
Julian shot Dave a warning look. His tone was bordering on disrespectful. The gnome retreated into the small opening at the rear of the observation platform. A few seconds later, there was a loud click from above. Cooper's cage fell, trailing the entirety of its long chain behind it.
Shit! Cried Stacy, about halfway back up her rope. What just happened?
Wrong lever,
said Bingham, Captain Righteous's fatter and less competent nephew. The old gnome emerged back onto the platform.
How was that? Bad, said Dave. Really, really bad. Oh, dear.
The gnome frowned at the empty space where Cooper's cage had been hanging.
Luckily, I tested that one first. I think I see how it works now.
You think?
Said Bingham.
Do you think, or do you know?
One never knows until one tries. The best I can do is make an educated guess based on what I've observed.
Can you go find someone else?
No,
said Julian. As unsettling as watching that cage fall had been, He reasoned that the levers were designed in such a way that pushing them one way would release the cages, and pushing them the other way would pull the cages back up, and that this wizened old gnome was smart enough to know that. Sending him off to go look for someone more competent was not only extremely insulting to the person who held their lives in his hands, but it would also unnecessarily lengthen the time they all spent dangling in cages of questionably sound structural integrity.
"You're doing a fine job,"
said Julian, laying the diplomacy on thick.
"Whatever you did with that first lever, maybe try doing the opposite with a different one."
"Thank you, Elf. I'll take that into consideration."
Shit. A failed diplomacy roll. He'd come off as condescending. The gnome walked back into the control room. Click. The chain which had been holding Chaz's cage slid out from the opening above and plummeted like a snake down to the desert. Bingham yelped like a puppy whose tail had just been stepped on.
"He thinks he sees how it works now,"
he glared at Julian.
"That crazy old gnome is going to kill us all thanks to you."
"Oh, I know how it works," said the gnome, coming back to the platform. "That one was for your smart talk, young fella."
That was terrific news. He'd released Chaz's chain on purpose, which meant he knew exactly which lever to pull and which way to pull it.
"We're very sorry," said Julian. "Our fear got the better of us."
The gnome nodded, then looked sternly at Bingham. Captain Righteous glared severely at Bingham.
"By the gods, nephew, if you don't apologize this instant, I'll..."
"I'm sorry,"
Bingham sobbed and blubbered, shaking his cage.
"I'm sorry."
Captain Righteous shook his head.
"His apology is sincere, friend. He is a weakling and a coward, but deserves not to suffer death for that."
The gnome nodded.
"Very well."
He retreated once more into the control room. With a series of heart-stopping clicks, the cages began to ascend.
"Ha ha ha!" cried Dave. "It's working!"
Julian leaned back in his cage, breathing heavily with relief. Stacy, now back inside her own cage, smiled at him.
"I still think I could have made that jump, but I'm glad I didn't have to."
Julian smiled back.
"Me too."
Chapter 4.
"You must really like tomatoes,"
said Cooper. The truth was actually quite the opposite. Chaz detested tomatoes, but he hadn't eaten in days. He'd gorged himself on the bitter, pulpy insides of the massive fruit. It was delicious at first, then merely tolerable. When his stomach was full and his arms looked like he'd just performed a back-alley appendectomy with his bare hands, the sour smell made him want to throw up. He looked up, focusing on the crescent-shaped island to calm his stomach. When it blinked out of existence, his insides ejected a thick red stream of vomit, indistinguishable from the tomato goop floating on top of the water, which had risen up to Cooper's nipples before he deactivated the decanter of endless water. Cooper frowned at Chaz's tomato puke.
"I guess I shouldn't jump to conclusions."
"Where the fuck is it?"
"Right here, dude."
Cooper pointed at the amoeba-shaped mass of vomit floating between them. A sudden burst of bubbles surfaced in and around the vomit island, and the pink water darkened by a few degrees of brown.
"The island, shithead! It's gone!"
Chaz ignored the aches and pains from his recent fall and got to his feet. He grabbed a sepal and pulled himself up until he could reach the stem with his other hand. Struggling to find footholds in the goop along the wall, he managed to climb back out of the entry wound he'd created in the top of the tomato when he fell through. When he saw the main stalk of the plant, as wide around as the trunk of an oak tree, he discovered that the tomato they'd landed in wasn't actually resting on the ground as he'd assumed, but it was too late. The tomato skin was rubbery smooth, and his whole body was slick with tomato innards.
"Shit!"
he screamed as he slid down the side. Fortunately, it was only about a 10-foot drop. Unfortunately, he was now coated from head to toe with sand.
"Dude!"
Cooper called out from the giant tomato dangling above Chaz's head.
"Are you okay?"
Chaz struggled to his feet and spat out some tomato-flavored sand.
"I will be after a shower. Can you bring that decanter down here?"
"Sure thing."
If anything could lift Chaz's spirits right now, it would be watching Cooper fall off this tomato and land on his big stupid ass. He watched, waiting for a half-orc head to appear out of the top of the fruit. Instead, a fist punched through the skin near the bottom.
Oh, dear God, no!
The tomato skin ruptured, and Chaz was struck by a gush of tomato juice, vomit, shit, and half-orc.
Jesus!
Said Cooper, picking himself up off Chaz.
That was like being born.
Get the fuck off me!
Cried Chaz. His fists squelched as he punched at Cooper's slimy chest.
Hey!
Said Cooper.
You need to chill the fuck out.
He got to his feet, releasing the flow of soiled water and tomato juice he must have been blocking, and dousing Chaz with more of the rancid liquid. Son of a... A glint of silver gave Chaz a split-second warning before the decanter of endless water rode the flow out of the tomato and connected hard with his face.
And you might have warned me that we were 10 feet off the fucking ground, asshole. The least you could have done after I just saved your life.
You put my life in danger in the first place. Now the island's gone, and we're separated from everyone else. You're gonna die with no water, and we'll probably get eaten by dire iguanas or some shit.
Cooper looked up.
Where'd the island go?
How the fuck should I know? It blinks from place to place. Sometimes it stays for a few minutes. Other times it hangs around for hours.
Awesome,
said Cooper, obviously disinterested.
Here, give me that decanter. I want to wash this tomato shit off me.
Chaz was getting sick and tired of being ignored. Now he spotted a bit of leverage, a means to finally get through this asshole's thick skull. He hugged the decanter of endless water close to his chest.
No,
he said.
You nearly killed me with this. I think I should hold on to it for a while. I'll give it back when I feel you're mature enough to handle the responsibility.
Cooper looked at him in a way that made him suddenly realize that there was more than one factor determining which of them was in a better position of leverage. When he pounced, Chaz immediately dropped the decanter, but Cooper ignored the decanter and tackled him, pinning him to the ground.
Is this mature enough for you?
Said Cooper, rubbing his balls on Chaz's face.
It feels pretty fucking mature to me. How about this?
A fart rumbled out of Cooper's ass like it was coming from stadium speakers. A searing wind washed over Chaz's face, hotter than anything the desert could hope to produce. It was like a portal to hell, only wetter, smelling of cabbage and sulfur.
Thank you, Cooper,
said Cooper, wagging his ass back and forth so that his balls slapped Chaz's face like a dank, hairy pendulum.
Thank you for jumping out of that goddamn cage to save my worthless life.
Thank you,
cried Chaz.
Thank you. Oh, God, thank you.
A loud squawk sent Cooper flying off of Chaz. They both looked up at the deflated tomato. The hole where Cooper had exited looked like an open mouth. Tendrils of tomato guts hung from it like someone kneeling over the toilet at the end of a party. Julian's bird was perched on the stem, staring down at them in a way that Chaz couldn't help but feel was judgmental.
Are you two quite all right?
What did he say?
Asked Cooper.
Did he catch that last part in context? Because out of context, it might have looked like we were...
Shut up,
snapped Chaz, then looking back up at the bird.
How did you get here? Where's the island?
The bird sighed.
I can't understand you when you speak like that. I'm fluent only in the elven tongue.
Chaz remembered. The bird could only understand what he was saying if he spoke with a British accent. That's why Cooper couldn't understand him. He tried to think of something British to say to reacquaint himself with the accent.
Romeo, oh Romeo, where the art for you, sweet Romeo?
That was almost certainly wrong. The bird's talons dug deeper into the tomato stem.
I feel I should warn you, sir, that I'm in a most unpleasant mood.
Sorry,
said Chaz.
What are you doing here?
My master sent me to see if you two were alive. Then he disappeared. I can no longer sense his presence.
The islands could be anywhere. We could try to find a wizard to teleport us there. Well, that will take time and money we don't have, and they'll be dead long before we can hope to rescue them.
Please tell me there's another option.
Chaz frowned.
Not a very good one.
What is it?
We go back to the Horsehead Inn.
The bird ruffled his feathers.
I fail to see how returning to that wretched tavern will help my master escape the flying island.
It won't. That option is dependent on them escaping on their own. If Julian escapes, that's probably the first place he'll look for you. But we don't have to decide now. Our first priority should be getting out of this desert.
Cooper took his fancy new axe off his back, causing Chaz to pay him a bit more attention than he was paying to Ravenous. He held it in front of him, but not in a threatening way. More like he was just suddenly interested in looking at it.
I don't remember,
he said.
I'll ask Chaz.
He lowered his axe and looked at Chaz.
What's the name of that town Captain Hardass said we were near?
I think it was called Totino or something.
Cooper stared at his axe for a moment, then nodded.
Nobby's homeland is only a week's walk from Totino.
Who the hell is Nobby?
She's...
Cooper paused again, staring at his axe, then grinned.
She says she's the one who will chop your legs off if you call her Nobby again.
Ravenous and I were thinking about going back to the Horse Head Inn,
said Chaz. Trying to appeal to Cooper's simple mind, he added,
maybe have a few drinks and see if the others turn up.
After consulting his axe again, Cooper looked up at Chaz.
Nobby thirsts for the blood of those who imprisoned her soul.
You're starting to freak me out, man. How about we just head to Totino and take it from there?
Cooper nodded, turned around, and started a trail of westward-leading footprints in the desert sand. Chapter 5. Dwarves, halflings, humans, half-elves, and some peculiarly bearded elves gave Randy, Denise, and Catherine a wide berth as they walked through the strangely productive orchard growing out of the sand. Some shielded their eyes or their children's eyes. Others simply turned and fled.
What the hell is wrong with these people? Asked Catherine. I mean, I know we've got a wolf and a big lizard thing with us, but I've seen a lot scarier stuff than this walking around in the city, and no one bats an eye.
It's Basil, said Randy. Basilisks can turn people to stone just by looking at them.
Catherine smashed herself in the face with her bag of holding, holding it tightly over her eyes.
Perhaps you should have mentioned that sooner.
Basil can't do it now, on account of both his eyes was stabbed out.
Oh,
said Catherine, lowering the bag.
That's so gross.
I could get used to this,
said Denise, riding on top of Basil.
Y'all go on now. Run like little bitches. You papaya-picking pussies.
When they arrived at the other side of the orchard, they found themselves on the border of a quaint little village. Cute cottages of various colors lined either side of a main avenue, all of their yards overabundant with every color and shape of vegetable imaginable. It was less of a small town and more of a giant salad. It seemed like a really tranquil place, that is, until six armed elves came charging up the main path between the houses. They ran sideways in a tight formation like they were well practiced in looking ridiculous. Three of them were armed with spears, and the other three were armed with crossbows. All of them wore small round bucklers on their left forearms with reflective inner surfaces, which they looked back at rather than face the same direction they were running.
Halt!
Said one of the crossbow-wielding elves. Catherine stepped forward.
Hi, I was just here recently, and I actually talked with one of your... Step away from the basilisk!
Randy finally understood their goofy running formation. A basilisk's gaze must not turn people to stone if it's reflected in a mirror. These guys were a special unit specifically trained to take down basilisks that wandered into town out of the desert. Now that Randy thought about it, he could see how a creature that turned people to stone with just a glance might be a serious threat to a village. But not Basil.
Hey, guys, you ain't gotta worry. Basil's harmless.
Are you mad?
Asked the leader.
You can't bring a basilisk into a populated area.
But he ain't got no eyes. Look!
Randy held his eyelids as wide open as possible with his fingers and stared into Basil's empty eye sockets.
Look at me! You see this? I ain't turning into stone. I could do this all day.
Enough!
Randy turned to the leader, who was now facing them. Like the other elves in this village, he wore the strangest style of beard Randy had ever seen. It was just one big tuft jutting out of the front of his chin, like he'd gotten stabbed in the face with the back end of a toilet brush.
What business do you have bringing this creature into Minswater?
I couldn't very well leave him out in the desert with no eyes. You'd never survive.
That is most irregular.
The soldier stroked his most irregular beard.
I concede the creature's gaze is not a threat, but its very presence is upsetting to the people of this village. I don't...
Hey, Jebediah!
Denise called down from atop Basil's back.
If you let us go, there might be something in it for you and your boys.
She pulled aside the leaf she was using as a tunic, revealing side boob that looked like hairy cottage cheese.
How'd you like to dip those beards in honey and paint these big fat titties?
Jesus Christ! Catherine looked up at Denise. Seriously, what the fuck is wrong with you? Where did that even come from? The lead soldier cleared his throat.
I'm afraid we cannot allow...
Listen, said Catherine. We've got no business in this town. We're just trying to pass through. She pointed at Randy. He's got this big-ass death lizard. That one's pregnant with scorpion babies for reasons that are becoming clear every minute, and I'm carrying around a literal bag of shit. The longer you detain us, the more upsetting it will be for the people of this village. I can guarantee you that.
The leader consulted with his similarly bearded subordinates, then addressed Catherine again.
We shall escort you and your companions out of Minswater, but it is my strong recommendation that you put this poor beast out of its misery.
He sneered up at Denise.
As well as the one it's riding.
Hey,
said Denise.
Randy offered the soldiers a slight bow.
Thank you.
Chapter 6. Stacy climbed back into her cage just before it re-entered the bottom of the island. The chamber it entered looked nothing like the bathroom it had been before. It was just plain, crumbly brown rock. The same went for the larger chamber, which the cages released them into. The air smelled earthy and musty, like an unfinished basement in a long-abandoned house. There were no green and red lights above the doors. Hell, there weren't even doors. Either someone had done some serious remodeling in the past couple of hours, or none of that stuff had been real. She prodded the floor outside her cage with her foot to make sure it was real. It felt solid enough. Dave fell out of his cage and lay spread eagle on the floor, grateful to be on solid ground again, even if it was inexplicably suspended several hundred feet in the air. The distinctly more competent of the two soldiers, who were apparently friends with Tim's sister, stomped out of his cage like a badass, his fist clenched around the pommel of his sword.
We must find that red-robed halfling at once, and may the gods still my hand, lest I deliver him the king's justice prematurely.
If that means what I think it means, said Julian,
stepping out of his cage and joining the others in the large chamber,
then please don't do that. We need to take him alive.
Who is he to you?
His name is Mordred. At least that's what he goes by. He's the one who sent us to this world, and he's the only one who can send us back home.
The soldier narrowed his eyes at Julian, then Dave, and finally Stacy.
You are all from this other world?
Stacy and Dave nodded.
I know it's difficult to believe, said Julian, but
not so difficult. At least, not as difficult as it is to believe that Catherine's brother could be a halfling, and yet she confirmed her claim in a zone of truth.
You and Catherine were in a zone of truth together?
Stacy remembered the zone of truth back in that little village on the desert border. She also recalled how sorrowful this guy's eyes had looked when Mordred slit Tim's throat. He wasn't grieving for Tim, but rather for Catherine's loss.
Yes, in Minswater.
How'd that go?
It was...
He looked down at his feet.
Uncomfortable.
His face went stern again.
Besides that, you've all consistently expressed a degree of ignorance which I cannot help but feel is genuine.
Thanks, said Dave.
My name is Righteous Justificus Blademaster. I am a captain in the King's Guard.
He extended his hand to Stacy. Stacy accepted his handshake, making sure her grip was at least as tight as his.
That's quite a mouthful. You can call me Stacy.
And you may call me Captain Righteous.
The captain appeared impressed with her handshake.
You were not among the others the first time I encountered this group of otherworldly folk.
Yeah, I was late to the party.
Of course, said Julian. We'd be grateful if you could help us find and apprehend Mordred. After he sent us back to our world, you'd be free to administer whatever justice you see fit.
Stacy raised her eyebrows. Sure, Mordred had just slit Tim's throat right in front of them all, but Dave and Catherine seemed pretty confident that he could be brought back to life. It seemed kind of cold-blooded for Julian to serve him up on a platter like that, knowing there wouldn't be anyone who'd bother trying to bring him back. Julian caught her looking at him and must have read something in her expression.
He's dangerous. He's a threat not only to us, but to all the people of this world, and maybe ours as well.
He looked at Captain Righteous.
Mordred is the one who set loose that guy with the dragons and the boat who attacked the city.
That little halfling?
Captain Righteous scoffed.
That
That's preposterous. He knows this world inside and out. He grows more and more powerful every day. If we don't stop him right now, we may never be able to.
Captain Righteous nodded. My nephew and I shall assist you to the best of our ability.
What? Said his pudgy sidekick.
The Crescent Shadow is not a large landmass. If Mordred is here, we should be able to find him.
That's a big if, said Dave. If he could teleport here, then he can teleport away. He could be anywhere by now.
That's true, said Julian. But if he thinks we're all still dangling in open cages, he couldn't be in any hurry to leave. He might be enjoying a celebratory drink right now in a hot tub full of hookers.
Stacy smiled at Julian. Is that what you'd be doing in his place?
I'm just saying, if we want to hit him while he's vulnerable, now might be our best chance. Might be our only chance.
The Crescent Shadow is outside our jurisdiction, said Bingham. Uncle, you know as well as I the reputation these wizards have. If we try to abduct one of theirs on their own island, we'll be lucky if all they do is toss us over the edge.
If what the elf says is true, we may be all that stands in the way of a new dark age.
Listen to yourself, Uncle. What evidence has the elf provided to support his claims? You said yourself that these people are criminals. Reason has abandoned you. It's as though your mind has been corrupted by that half-elf whore. She isn't worth... Oh!
Whatever Bingham was going to finish that sentence with was truncated by a swift punch in the face. Stacy didn't know whether that said more about the captain's feelings for Catherine or for Bingham.
Apprehending this Mordred is only the beginning of our concerns. We must also figure out a way to smuggle him off this island.
And there's the dice, said Julian. We still need to find those.
What dice? Asked Captain Righteous.
Dave eyed the chamber's exit, no doubt hoping to take this conversation to a restaurant or something. The poor guy hadn't eaten in days.
Mordred must have the dice. Isn't that why Tim stole them?
Tim didn't steal them, said Stacy. It was Catherine's handsome friend.
The adjective wasn't strictly necessary, but Stacy wanted to see if it got a rise out of Captain Righteous. He shot her a look of alarm.
Who?
The half-drow,
said Dave.
You're splitting hairs. Does anyone here doubt that he lifted the bag at Tim's request?
Stacy shrugged. I'm just trying to keep the facts straight, in case there's something we've missed in the details.
Has Catherine been consorting with a drow?
I don't know how much they've been consorting, Stacy emphasized the last words with air quotes, but they've been spending some time together.
It doesn't matter, said Dave. If Mordred had the dice, he wouldn't have bothered with this cage bullshit. He might not have killed us all outright, but he would have stripped us to our bear's defenses so he could toy with us like a cat with a maimed mouse.
Enough!
Captain Righteous had his fingertips against his temples, like he was suffering from a major headache.
Can someone please explain to me why you're all so afraid of a single halfling and a bag of dice?
He's not really a halfling, said Julian. That body is an avatar, albeit for an even less intimidating-looking person. But those dice, those are dangerous. They're probably the most powerful magic things in this world.
Magic items, Dave corrected him.
Actually, a more appropriate term would be artifacts.
Captain Righteous's gaze locked on Dave. His prominent jaw clenched. Dave had captured his full attention.
He can use them to manipulate this world's reality, said Julian. Whatever he can imagine, he can make happen. He can rule this world like a god.
An Old Testament god, Dave added, full of wrath and insecurity and an insatiable desire to be worshipped.
A seed of thought began to grow in Stacy's mind, a theory. She nurtured it for a moment, testing its plausibility before saying anything aloud.
Uncle!
Bingham honked out through his bleeding nose.
Can you see now that they're mad? No artifact is that powerful!
Captain Righteous stroked his mustache and the thick stubble growing on his prominent chin.
It does seem rather far-fetched. Surely, if an artifact so powerful existed, this world would have...
I know where the dice are, Stacy blurted out.
It was all too clear now, almost obvious. Everyone in the room turned to her expectantly. Dave shrugged.
Well, where are they?
They're up Tim's butthole.
The chamber was silent, at least until Bingham started crying.
Sorry, said Stacy. I probably should have led up to that. Dave got me thinking when he was comparing Mordred to Old Testament God.
Thinking about Tim's butthole?
Asked Julian.
Not yet. I was thinking about the wrath and insecurity issues. Swap out a need to be worshipped for a desire to not be thought of as a complete dick, and you've got a pretty solid description of Tim.
Dave and Julian lowered their heads, not wanting to speak ill of their recently deceased friend, but also not disagreeing.
But Tim is also very smart, right?
Stacy hoped to assuage their guilt a little by giving them the opportunity to enthusiastically recognize something complimentary about Tim. As she expected, they both looked up from the floor and nodded.
Much too smart to show up at a meeting with Mordred with the bag of dice in his hand. He'd want to hide them somewhere safe. And of course there's the added bonus, should Mordred offer terms that Tim found suitable, of being able to live up to his part of the agreement by giving Mordred dice from his ass.
Stacy paused to catch her breath.
I don't disagree that Tim was not above that level of pettiness, said Dave. So I concede that's a possibility, but I don't understand why you're so convinced it's the only possibility. He could have hidden them under a rock somewhere or something and used his knowledge of the location as his leverage. Why would he bring the dice to the meeting? Mordred could have simply killed him and taken the dice.
Why agree to a meeting at all? Said Stacy. What could Mordred have possibly offered that Tim would have been gullible enough to believe?
Julian frowned.
I've been trying to figure that out since this whole mess started. I can't think of anything.
Exactly. Powerful as they are, the dice are worthless as a bargaining chip. If Tim were to hand them over, Mordred would have all the power and no incentive to honor his part of the deal.
Is Tim's butthole still somewhere on the horizon of this story? Asked Julian.
I'm getting to that. Stacy spread her hands, getting ready for her big reveal. Tim orchestrated this whole thing. He played us like fiddles.
After waiting a moment for gasps of realization, which never came, she explained a bit more.
Julian and I intercepted an encrypted letter about a major deal going down on the Crescent Shadow. How did the rest of you know to come here?
Dave scratched the back of his neck.
I was at Arby's. An old acquaintance of Professor Goosewaddle claimed he had recently acquired some merchandise.
His eyes met Stacy's.
He was bragging about some big deal going down at the Crescent Shadow.
Stacy looked at Captain Righteous.
How about you two?
The captain frowned.
I was attempting to arrest Catherine for breaking into a general store. One thing led to another, and here we are.
She never told me why she suspected her brother would be here. I'm willing to bet it had something to do with some bullshit clue that fell into her lap.
Actually, said Julian, she probably just beat it out of that guy we left tied up with her wolf.
Oh, right.
Stacy thought about it for a moment.
That certainly is a possibility, but still it...
We get what you're saying, said Dave. We were played like fiddles. But what makes you think that Tim was the fiddler? How do you know it wasn't Mordred?
Stacy smiled.
Because Mordred was the biggest fiddle of all. Tim set this whole thing up to draw one of the Mordreds out of hiding, so that we could have this opportunity to grab him. He arranged a meeting with Mordred, making a bunch of demands that he'd need to meet in exchange for the dice. When they meet, Tim gives him some bullshit location where he'd hidden the dice, and Mordred sends some minions off to retrieve them. In the meantime, we start showing up. Naturally, Mordred has spies on the island who spot us coming a mile away. He's been anticipating some kind of trap anyway. He thinks he's a couple of steps ahead of Tim, who he has locked in a cell. When Tim's dice information turns out to be bullshit, Mordred knows the whole thing was a setup to lure him out of hiding. He wants to show Tim that his ruse didn't work. Instead of us grabbing Mordred like we were supposed to, Mordred caught us. What Mordred didn't realize, however, is that he was playing right into Tim's hands.
Julian frowned.
Are you forgetting the part where Tim got murdered?
All part of the plan.
So he sacrificed himself for us?
Aha, said Stacy, perhaps overplaying it a bit. That's precisely what he wanted us to think, which is that Tim is part of the whole plan, and how I'm certain, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that...
She looked at Julian expectantly for him to finish the sentence.
That the dice are up Tim's butthole?
Exactly.
Stacy raised her hand for a high five. Julian flinched like she was about to slap him.
I only guessed that because it's the end of the story that I've been waiting for. I don't actually have any idea what you're talking about.
Stacy sighed.
Think about it. What happens if we catch Mordred, get Tim resurrected, and he craps out the dice for us?
Dave's eyes widened.
He's a hero who was willing to sacrifice his life to save us all. He's fucking Jesus.
Now they were getting somewhere.
And what happens if we let him stay dead? Which, let's be honest, he probably felt was a distinct possibility.